Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is episode 58. We're in May 2017, and this is going to be a very quick solo show. There isn't a lot of huge things happening in the world of gaming, so I figured I'm not going to not do a show. That's not going to happen, but I am going to do one just by myself. I hope you enjoy it, and we're going to start running through all of the news first. With Nintendo, we finally know how many consoles they've sold for the Nintendo Switch. And it's not a bad number, 2.74 million in March. That puts them in the running for the quickest selling console ever. Well, they're not quite there, maybe second or third best selling console in the world. But the important thing is that they launched in March, and usually those titles go to consoles that launch in the holiday period. So this is a real success for Nintendo. Now, we have to keep in mind the fact that Nintendo is the kind of manufacturer that has diehard fans. And those fans rush to get the console as soon as it's available. So it's not certain if they're going to manage to keep that dynamic going for a long time. And it's pretty sure that they're not going to be like overtaking the best-selling consoles over a year or two or things like that. So it's not like we expect there to be a wider installed base of Nintendo Switches compared to, you know, PS4s or Xbox Ones or things like that. But it's still very impressive. It sort of solidifies the base that Nintendo needs to have a successful console after a disastrous Wii U. So that's great news for Nintendo. I think they're now expecting to sell 10 million in fiscal year 2017, which I think, you know, they can make it. They have a good lineup now for Nintendo. It's kind of, there's always this caveat that you need to be mindful of. They have one strong title almost every month until the end of the year. Usually a strong Nintendo title. There are a bunch of other smaller things that get people to, you know, hold off on, well, not hold off, but like that hold people until the big title is released the next month. So that's a pretty positive looking first year for the Switch. And as I'm sure you remember, I wasn't convinced when they did their big presentation in January. So good on Nintendo. And we'll see how it goes. But I think by the end of the year, they've managed to offer something that is convincing enough that people are going to be happy with the product. And by the end of the year, it's going to be an actual valuable purchase, and we're going to have packs and everything. And so there's going to be Zelda, one of the best games ever made. And if they manage to do this with Mario, or at least give a really good Mario, then Zelda and Mario is really all you need to convince people to buy the console, with on top of that the concept that works of having it portable. So yeah, there you go. And I think there is one thing that relates to this. It's the discontinuation of the NES Classic, which a lot of people have been saying is an error because it was selling a lot and they were making a lot of money on it. And the answer to this, I think it was Régis Fils-Aimé, the president of Nintendo of America, who was talking with Time, and he understands the sentiment that, you know, this, why would you want to discontinue a product that is so successful? And I think it has to do with what he says is that it has to do with resources. And he says, we don't have unlimited resources. And this might seem like a weird answer, because you might think, well, let's get more resources, you know, to be able to produce that thing that is incredibly popular. But it's not that easy. I really think that there is a... I often talk about this with my experience with Blizzard as a company, and the fact that company culture is so important. And it's really hard to preserve. Company culture is a sort of intangible quality that means that the company is capable of doing the things it's supposed to do the way it's supposed to do it. And of course, I talk about Blizzard because this is what I know, but you have a lot of people that worked at Blizzard and that did great things at Blizzard and that left Blizzard, and then they didn't manage to gel the products that they were developing as well. And similarly, there are people who worked in other companies before, and when they joined Blizzard, they suddenly began making amazing games that, you know, not that they didn't make amazing games before, but not to the same extent. And I think it has a lot to do with company culture. So when Régis Fils-Aimé says, we don't have unlimited resources, I think what he's saying is our company culture is such that this is the configuration we need to be in order to create the kind of products we want to create. And it's not as simple as saying, oh, just hire more people and, you know, grow the company. And that is a really hard thing to do. And sometimes it's not the right thing to do. So anyway, NES Classic discontinued. There's the Super NES Classic that's already in the works. That's not a surprise. But overall, I think they are wanting to focus on their real star product, the Switch. And in order to do that, they need to make sure that their resources, which are limited, have to be well allocated. To me, it makes sense. Probably doesn't to a lot of people, but I think it's a coherent way of looking at things. Mario Kart is out. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. It's still Nintendo news. And just to say that, you know, it's one of the best-selling games of 2017 for Amazon. So far, you know, it's been out for like 5 days. But still an indicator that people who own a Switch are incredibly hungry for games. So basically everyone who owns a Switch is going to be buying it, or almost. Ooh, and by the way, fun tidbit, in case you didn't see it, the attach rate for Zelda on the Switch is above 1-to-1, meaning the attach rate is, you know, the number of games you sell per console on the market. And usually, you know, you have 20% of the owners of a console that buy a specific game, maybe more if it's a system seller, especially in the early days of the console. In the case of Zelda, they actually sold more Zelda Switch, so not the Wii U version, but they sold more Zelda Switch than they sold Switch consoles themselves. So again, when you're talking about Mario Kart 8 Deluxe being the best-selling game of 2017 so far, that's an important point, it sort of puts into perspective this idea, this mindset that Nintendo fanboys and fangirls are in. Like, they're going to go out and buy lots of things immediately. And in the case of Zelda, they might buy, you know, the game itself, because they don't manage to get the console. So they figured, you know, I'll have the game at least. And many people might be buying two versions, you know, the collector's edition and the regular version, one to keep, one to play, you know, one to keep, like, not even open it, stuff like that. So Nintendo, I was making jokes about the Nintendo subreddit a few months ago, and yeah, that absolutely lines up with the kind of things I was seeing there. Other bit of Nintendo news is the announcement of the 2DS XL, the new 2DS XL actually, which is a version of the new 3DS XL without the 3D. You know, the Nintendo 3DS or 2DS is a really great console. I think it still has a couple of years ahead of it. And Nintendo saying, yes, it's not, you know, the 3DS is going nowhere. We're still very committed to it. And the Switch is not a replacement for it. It's going to hold for a year or two. And the announcement of that new 2DS XL is definitely an indication that they are serious about it. But with the success of the Switch, I there was a question of whether or not they would have another portable system in the works. Well, they certainly have one in the works, but now with the success of the Switch, I can't imagine it's going to see a release unless something goes horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. So we'll see. But the 2DS XL is a great piece of hardware. It's about $150. If you want, would I recommend a 2DS XL? For some people, I guess, maybe even younger gamers, that is definitely a great system. It's really outdated now. The 3DS we don't care about, as I think most people agree. The new part of it is not super incredible. It makes the graphics a little bit smoother, but there aren't many titles that take advantage of that, the updated internals of the console. So I don't know if I would recommend the new 2DS XL to many people, but for some people, it would make sense. The question is, would you buy, if you want a Nintendo system, do you want a 2DS XL, well, a new 2DS XL, or a Switch? I think if you're set on wanting a 3DS family console, then the new 2DS XL, which has the clamshell design and bigger screens, is definitely the one you want. 3DS is useless. 2DS is kind of clunky with that non-foldable format. So new 2DS XL is definitely the one you want. It's coming out in July, by the way. But I think, you know, if you want a Nintendo system going forward, it's really a Switch that is going to give you the kind of things that you can get excited about. The new 2DS XL, the 3DS family has some titles coming still, I understand that, like this new Pikmin game and a bunch of others. But it's more for the back catalog that you're going to buy a 3DS console. So the Switch is the thing to be excited about going forward. So still, doesn't mean that there aren't any reasons to buy the new 2DS XL. I even caught myself thinking, maybe I should get one. And I do have a 3DS. So so I'm not going to. But, phone. There you go. I turned it off. What's happening next? Fire Emblem Heroes has out-earned Super Mario Run. And that is something that will not surprise many people, but it's still, I don't know, I think it's bad news. I was really hoping that if anyone could do it, Nintendo could manage to make a freemium game work. But Fire Emblem Heroes, which is a free-to-play, of course, if you don't know the distinction, freemium is a game that you can download and then you play a little bit, and if you want to play the full thing, you pay once and you get all of the game. That's usually what's referred to as a freemium model. And the free-to-play is a game where you download the game, you can play for free for the whole game, but really if you want to progress through it, if you don't want to, there are degrees. You know what a free-to-play game is. I'm not going to explain to you again. But so that's the distinction. Freemium is really different. And even Mario from Nintendo didn't manage to make enough money to make it a better seller than a free-to-play game. And if that doesn't work, if that doesn't make enough money, then I don't know what can. You know, Mario, sure, it maybe wasn't the best game in the world, but it was pretty good. So that might mean Nintendo is saying that they still prefer the freemium model. But really, I don't know that you can justify making these kinds of decisions when the thing next door is making so much more money. It's literally leaving money on the table. And I, for one, don't like that model because it's a different kind of enjoyment. But maybe there's space for both. Maybe people who want a free-to-play game don't necessarily want a freemium game and vice versa, so you can make both and cater to both types of gamers. It's possible. I would like this to be the case, but when the decision is, if we do this, I don't know. We'll see. But hopefully the Switch, I think I can say thankfully, the Switch and traditional consoles are still very much the home of full-priced, full-experience games. So we still have that going for us, and with the Switch, we can have a portable version of that. But yeah, I won't lie. I was a little bit disappointed by that bit of news. I hope it doesn't affect Nintendo too much, but at the same time, I'm a realist, so I kind of understand what that means. Let's go to Sony and the incredible success of the PS4. It's still chugging along to along the path of the PlayStation 2, which if you adjust the months and the stuff like that, because I believe the PS2 launched in March, at least in Japan, I think so. I can't remember, but it wasn't launched in the same on the same date on all the countries and etc. But I can't even remember that. But anyway, the point is, it's going really well for the PS4, and the PS2 was the best-selling console until the Wii, which is kind of the anomaly. Like, nothing did as well as the Wii. And it's the PS4 is doing as well as the PS2, which is kind of incredible. They are 60 million units sold at this point. The Xbox part of this, meaning the numbers, well, we don't have them because Microsoft doesn't release those numbers. So we don't quite know, but it's very likely that they're not doing as well. And it's easing the transition to the Xbox Scorpio, which we'll have more information about in a few months, a few weeks, actually, at E3. So that's, good news for Sony. I'm not going to go into all of the earnings and stuff like that for the different companies. I usually try to. So what I do when it's earnings season is I look at everything and try to pick out the interesting numbers, because I don't want to bore you or put you to sleep with, like, Capcom missed on all of their games targets except for, what was it? No, even Resident Evil 7 ended up missing, even though they had a great start. But anyway, those kinds of things, not incredibly interesting. I hope you will be okay with me not going through every single one. What else? A bunch of other little bits of news. I wanted to talk about Call of Duty. Just like every year, we talk about Call of Duty and say what we think. The trailer for Call of Duty World War II was released, and holy poop, does it remind everyone of... Well, it's World War II, so it reminds everyone of World War II, but the experience of the trailer really seems to be reminiscent of the experience of, I believe it was Call of Duty 1, the game where you first stormed the beaches of Normandy. And that was an amazing, amazing moment in gaming. There were a couple of those in those, realistic first-person shooter games. There was Call of Duty 1. I honestly believe it was one of the most crazy experiences I had in my gaming life. Storming the beaches of Normandy, I was like behind my desk hiding, metaphorically from the bullets, the German bullets whizzing by my head and my helmet. And I was like stressed out of my mind. It felt like the kind of thing that could be the closest in gaming form to an actual stressful war experience. Of course, if we look at it now, it's not that great graphics, blah, blah, blah. But the point is, this one seems to be bringing this a little bit closer. It's when they're saying we're going back to our roots with this game, it's kind of, well, we're remaking Call of Duty 1. Not exactly. There seems to be a lot more emphasis on story, on character. There's a multiplayer part that is specifically designed for multiplayer. It's not the single player that you can play with a friend. It's a dedicated campaign. So between this, the memories of actually I think it was Medal of Honor that was storming the beaches of Normandy, and Call of Duty 1 was Stalingrad and the boats and all of that. That was also crazy. And then Modern Warfare was insane too. But so regardless of which title it was, I was very surprised that it sort of brought me back there at that space. And I think this might be the Call of Duty that speaks to me the most from the past 5 years. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to rush out and buy it. I don't think I will. But I'm curious. I'm definitely, again, more curious than I was when they first said, "Where you know, we first heard the rumors, it's probably going to be about World War II. Marvel versus Capcom Infinite is being released on September 19. You'll know I'm a gaming versus fighting game fan, so of course I'm interested in this, but I think there are a lot of Marvel fans that are interested in this. The graphics are kind of weird. I mean, it's the previous titles in the Marvel versus Capcom series also had... the third one, I wasn't a fan. It was kind of plasticky looking. And this one is also kind of weird plasticky looking, but it also has some nifty effects, which graphically I'm on the fence, but... it's just, it seems like it's going to be a great, exactly what's on the box. A great bundle of fun, of Marvel and Capcom craziness that makes absolutely no sense, but that is just fun. So I'm hoping that the title does well, and I'm certain that one, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get. If only, I would like to say, if only to play with my friends. I don't know that we'll have an opportunity to do that, but maybe online. Anyway, we'll see. That go check out the trailer. Even if you're not into fighting games, I think it might be fun for most people who enjoy these kinds of universes. Halo 6 is going to be about Master Chief, which I'm not sure. So I'm not a fan of Halo. I've never really played it, so please excuse my blasphemy, but Halo 5 tried to take the game to different areas, different, you know, Master Chief was not the main part of the game. And it begs the question of what do these series do with, you know, how do they move forward? We just talked about Call of Duty, and when you have one game every year, of course, it's even more difficult. But for Halo... do you remake the same game forever until the end of time? Do you, you know, try to do something different at the risk of alienating your longtime fans? I honestly don't have an answer to this. I think what I would have been completely bewildered a few years ago, but I think what we saw between the two GOW, the Gears of War and God of War, might hold part of the answer, and of course that rests on what God of War is actually going to be, but it seems that God of War is trying to take the core of what the game is and sort of put it in a different setting. And what Gears of War did with Gears of War 4 was basically making the exact same thing again with a different character, and that's also what Halo 5 did. It was really just Halo with a different set of protagonists. So I'm wondering if, and that was, I mean, I think in both cases, it was like, okay, fans kind of played through it and it was all right, but it was kind of underwhelming. And I'm wondering if the answer to this conundrum isn't to take the character, keep the character, keep, you know, the core of what the baseline of the game or the story or all of that is, and change the setting and maybe that even possibly the type of game a little bit. So you still speak to the nostalgia of the players, but you don't necessarily repeat the a type of gameplay that might have aged or that might have, you know, that people might be tired about. And we'll see, maybe God of War is going to be, you know, that amazing intro we saw last year. Maybe it's just going to be that, and then the game is exactly the same as the previous God of Wars. It's very possible, but I think if they keep even that tone, that setting that we saw last year, it might be enough to make it feel fresh and interesting to old time players. Well, interesting them anyway. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But this the idea that Halo 6 is going to return to Master Chief. I don't know if they can do anything different with an FPS. An FPS is an FPS. But this idea that they're saying it's okay, guys. We get what you want. It's really more Master Chief. is more worrisome to me than anything else. And again, I'm not a Halo player, so what do I know? I have no legitimacy talking about this. Atlas has basically said, you remember that thing we said a few weeks ago about how you can't stream Persona? Sorry, we didn't mean it. Well, they kind of did. They have changed some of the terms of this, but the details of the content don't really matter. I think this is the company saying sorry, and even more deeply, if we want to speculate a little bit, this is the American part of the company convincing the Japanese part of the company that this wasn't cool. And we talked about how it probably was very difficult for them to even post that that warning because it didn't make sense. And I think hopefully the Japanese masters, as they put it in the original blog article, the Japanese masters have understood why it wasn't a good idea to say this. So yeah, they've said they're not as hard on all of this, and it's a good thing. A couple additional little tidbits. On Blizzard's side, Overwatch has surpassed 30 million players. What does that mean? It's not copies sold. It's accounts registered and players that are included in the PC bangs in Korea. So it's people that might not have bought the game. Some of them do. And apparently, in the case of Overwatch, more people in those types of settings do buy the game than for other types of games, other games. But many of them don't buy it. They pay per hour of playing the game, and it's basically internet cafes. So they count those too. It's not 30 million boxes sold. Still, 30 million players, that's a significant amount, and the game isn't even 1 year old. I think it's going to celebrate. It was released in May, right? At the end of May. So, yeah, that's a significant amount, and the numbers are basically not slowing down. Just a tiny, tiny bit. But 15 million was announced in August. I think, wait, what was it? Yeah, 15 million was announced in August. Oh, and the release was early or late May? Can't remember. 20 million in October. January was 25 million. And now in April, we're 30 million. So yeah, Overwatch is a successful game that won't surprise no one. Heroes of the Storm. Yeah, I did want to talk about this very quickly. So they have their 2.0 release. They have the Overwatch-themed event, which many people might be interested in. And they have those mega bundles, which you can get 20 characters for free, basically. They cost 100 gems. And you get 100 gems for logging in before the end of May. And I'm sure many people are aware of this, so just go do it just to get the characters. So, you know, you get free characters for the game, which is a really fun game. I really enjoy it. But beyond this, everyone knows that you should go and get the characters. Get the characters in all regions. This will mostly apply, I'm guessing, to US and EU. But if you're playing in EU especially, go get your free characters in the US region. You know, you can select in the Blizzard launcher, you can select your region just above the play button. You can select between, you know, Europe, US, Asia, and, Europe, Americas, Asia, let's be inclusive. And there's the PTR, the beta, all of these. So just select US if you're in the EU and log in and get your free characters. Then you can go and play with your friends sometimes when you have American friends. I mean, I've really enjoyed being able to switch between Europe and the US in Overwatch. I'm still incredibly sad that it's not possible for other games, especially Hearthstone and Heroes, and my ideal solution would be to take my full collection from Heroes and be able to play with my American friends. Fortunately, it's not possible, so at least what you can do is get that bundle. Go do it, because no one else... I've listened to a bunch of Heroes podcasts, you know, the usual Core with Scott, Into the Nexus with Garrett, and they don't say this. So you should say it. I'll send them a note. Finally, if you're broke and don't want to play on PC and don't like Blizzard games, there's a demo for Prey that's available on PS4 and Xbox One. So maybe you want to go check that out. Prey is a really interesting, has a really interesting history, and the new Prey game is developed by Arkane Studios, which is a French company. They're the ones that made Dishonored, so they do have a pretty decent street cred at the moment. So if you want to play a little bit, I think it's the first hour. It's a weird game. It's fun, so go check it out. And that is going to be it for this mini solo episode of Pixels. I've heard some feedback on those solo episodes. Some people tell me that they're not as good as the episodes where I have guests, which I can completely understand. I'm curious to know what you like, dislike in these solo episodes. So if you've listened, please come to Twitter to let me know. I'm really trying. You know, I think there are some people that manage to make really fun solo shows, and that's not what I want to do all the time, but I would like when, you know, sometimes I do want to do a solo show, and I would love for it to be as enjoyable as the non-solo shows. So, you know, I'm not going to abandon and cut and run and stop doing it. I'm going to keep doing it until I actually get good at it. So every few months you might get one of those here and there. But your feedback is also really interesting and important to me, and I would love to hear you guys' thoughts on if you enjoy it, what you enjoy about it. If you don't enjoy it, I think that's going to be more people are going to be in that camp. And if you don't enjoy it, let me know why. Constructive criticism if possible. What you like, is it the hesitation? If my, you know, I'm not as fluent and funny in English, I don't know. Let me know. I really want to work on this. I really want to get better. So I'll be expecting your feedback on Twitter, not Patrick. I'll also be expecting your feedback on Facebook if you want to go that way. I'm not Patrick on there too. And you can leave a note on the website. The website is French Spin, as you know, so you can go there, find the notes for this episode, and you can tell me what you thought. You can also do that on iTunes and on any other site or service you use to listen to podcasts that has a catalog. And of course, it helps people find the show, and that's always super useful. It makes us rise up in the rankings, et cetera, et cetera. So if you have a little bit of time, you can do as MattyT1483 and Sean T. Gallagher did from the US. They both gave 5 stars, saying, great listen and outside sales guy. Thank you. Matty T said he's basically traveling. He's saying, as an outside sales agent for a large travel company, I am all over Illinois and Iowa weekly and the world multiple times a year, etc., etc. Thank you very much for this this review. And Sean also said, this show is a great stop. It's a great stop for all your gaming news. Patrick Beja is often complimented by a wide range of different hosts, each with a unique take on the gaming industry. Especially enjoy the shows with Daniel Ahmad for the in-depth look at the analytical side of the gaming market. Absolutely agree. Daniel is an amazing, amazing analyst, and I love having him on. We should probably do a show with Daniel at some point in the near future, because things are, the end of the year is end of the fiscal year has happened, and so there's lots of numbers everywhere, and he knows his numbers. So we'll see. That will possibly happen fairly soon. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Again, awaiting your feedback, and we will be back in a couple of years. No, it's hard to speak nonstop for half an hour. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Talk to you then. Yeah!
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.